He's going to talk about managing your remote sites and selling that to management. Chris.
Thank you. All right. I wasn't nervous enough, and then I got that. First off, I'd like to thank Steve Brown. I got an email yesterday, and just to tell you where his mind was, I loaned him a Comrex BrickLink box, and he sent me an email and said, Chris, a couple of things. Number one, I'll see you tomorrow. I have your BrickLink. You know, I'll just bring it with me and give it to you there. And then buried like in the third or fourth paragraph, by the way, we need somebody to do this. Can you do this? It's like, I see what you're trying to do to me here. So, first of all, one of the things we're going to be talking about, none of this is really new or revolutionary. I'm not pretending that I've come up here and invented the wheel or anything. However, you know, it might spark some ideas and perhaps maybe help you open the conversation with your managers if some of this applies to you. You know, one of the things that people know a lot about, you know, who know me, know I travel a lot. I do a lot of different things. I've got my hands in a lot of different projects and radio stations, and I keep busy. There's the whole situation of how do you keep that up? I'm just one person with all these different radio stations. So that's some of what we're going to talk about today. There we go. A couple of my favorite quotes. I kind of call these my guiding principles, and they really help me think about some of the things that I do creatively in engineering. The first one, a lot of people have heard this one. It's one of my favorites of all time. Humans are allergic to change. They love to say, we've always done it that way. I try to fight that. And I find that a lot still in this industry. You know, we're always, well, why are we using this kind of remote controller? Why are we doing it this way? Well, that's the way we've always done it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have a lot of respect for the way things have been done. It works. A lot of this stuff is reliable. There's really, oftentimes, the inertia is good enough where there's not enough reason to change. But sometimes that prevents us from really thinking, why not, when we look at these things, which is part of my second line, which is my job is to enable creative geniuses. One of the things I do at Intercom is, unlike the guy who sits in the corner and says no all the time, my job is to be able to say yes. So when a program director comes to me and says, I want to do all these wild things, I can say, yeah, okay, let's make that happen. So I kind of use that as a guiding principle, which also ties into the last one, which is something the general manager that I worked for years ago told me, which is great. It may be difficult, it may be expensive, and it may even be ill-advised, but it can be done. And that was early in my career when he said, well, you know, why don't we do this? And I went, oh, I can't do that. That's just, no. And he said, no, you can do that. You just don't want to, and for one of these reasons. And he was right. And, you know, I kind of over the years learned, well, you know what? Yeah, I can do that. But let me tell you why I think we shouldn't. And kind of reframe that from just, we can't do that because we just don't do that, to, well, we can, but here's the, you know, all the information you need to make a smart decision. So the challenges, what are we dealing with here? Well, let's just go through what I deal with on any given day, and it all becomes clear. I'm responsible for 18 transmitters, 17 program streams, 7 facilities, 5 program directors, 4 kids, 2 cats, and a wife. Not in that order, by the way. Just in case she sees the video, not in that order. But that's a lot of stuff for one guy to deal with. So, you know, what are the ways to kind of keep all of this, I like to call the herding of the cats? How do we do that? Well, first of all, be willing to throw away what you think you know. Be ready to talk to your managers about ROI, return on investment. Speak their language, understand where they're coming from. Because I found over the years, engineers, this stuff makes perfect sense to us. You go in and you talk to your manager, and all here's yours is, wah, 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 money, wah, 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 wah. So you have to learn to kind of speak that language and make your case. Part of that is looking at the cost of maintaining old gear versus replacing new gear, plus the value of your time. Be honest with management about the big picture. Help them to the conclusion. And that goes back to, you know, one of the comments I get when I work with station managers for stations that I've consulted for, they say, we like you, you're a little different. You know, the last guy Everything he ever said was over my head. You seem to be able to really explain it and tell me what's going on. And there's some truth to that, again, because this stuff is easy to us. We look at it as, it's just doing this. You know, I'm just going to go and change the output loading and the tuning and get the transmitter peaked up and, you know, replace the tube. But they don't understand what we're talking about. To us, it's just any given day. So, you know, when you say we need to buy a new transmitter, well, all they hear is buy. So it's our job to kind of lay out the case for that in a way that they understand. Again, understanding what may be obvious to you may not be obvious to them. And be ready to know that you don't have all the answers, and that's okay. You're the guy who can, or woman, I'd say guy, you're the person who can get the answers. And that's what's more important. It's not important that you know everything. It's that you know you don't know everything, but you know where to go to find out. And I have what I call the Rolodex of people that are smarter than me. So back to the ROI argument. A great example of this is our Madison market. And I always joke, you know, this is probably my 13th broadcaster's clinic, and I always joke about how I always make sure my station's in Madison, all the tower lights are working, the modulation's 100% legal, the signal's good, because I'm going to have about 200 assistant engineers in the market. So that's one of those things when I work with Madison. But for a long time, we had a full-time engineer in Madison. We have three radio stations, three FMs, and then I've got was originally responsible for the three stations in Milwaukee, two FMs and an AM. We found over the years that, you know, there was just barely enough to have a full-time engineer, barely enough going on. Really, that person's job was to babysit transmitters. When they, inevitably, these 30-year-old transmitters, when they had issues, that's when this person would get to work. Well, that's, you know, $50,000-$60,000 a year, or, you know, a little bit less back then. But nowadays, I don't know how many of you have seen the article I wrote about the disappearing engineer, you know, how we're not getting any more people into the industry as people are retiring. It's becoming even harder and harder to find people to do those things, let alone, you know, in a market like Madison, affordably. So that's where we have these discussions. Okay, well, you know, for we have two Class A stations here. You buy a new transmitter for one of those Class A's, solid state with a lot of redundancy, probably doesn't need a lot of hands-on. That's about $50,000. Well, there's right away, we don't need somebody to deal with that on a daily basis. So if you remove that $50,000 in salary, your transmitter's paid off in a year. You know, you multiply that by three, you know, it works out to just a couple of years, we've made our money back. And that's not to say it's great that we put somebody out of a job. The person who left actually got a better job, moved on, and we couldn't replace it. We put an ad in the trades. We had a grand total of two applicants, one person who had no experience and one person who had way too much and couldn't possibly pay the salary that this person would be worth. So it's not even a case of here's how we can save money. It's a case of how can we make this work? You know, I can't be in two places at once. I have a hard time sometimes being one place at once. So that's when we have the conversation about ROI. Do we hire contract engineers to maintain these really old, inefficient transmitters? Or do we spend the money? Well, after having that conversation, we spent the money. And that's the conversation that you have to be ready to have. So we have these conversations. What are some of the things we need to look at to make sure we can pull this off? IP connectivity is important. There are a million different ways to do that. Think about using VPN. Think about IP-enabled remote controls and transmitters. SNMP, we'll touch on that a little bit. Centralized control, redundancy, consistency in terms of how these sites are laid out, and of course, documentation. Now again, none of this is anything earth-shattering. You know, Andy Disterhoff, Alex Hartman, you know, guys kind of my age, they've been doing this for a long time. So, you know, it's not earth-shattering, but I hear a lot of, that's some really cool stuff, but I can't get my boss to buy anything. Well, that's kind of what this is about. Is, you know, how do you make that case? Documentation, obviously, is the big thing that I run into all the time. You know, there's that old saying, temporary fixes become permanent replacements. And 9 times out of 10, never documented. So obviously, put a prime on your documentation. And consistency is an interesting one. We don't hear a lot about this, but I have 6 transitor sites. All pretty soon we'll have all the same, mostly same model transmitter. All have the same remote controls. All of them have the same commands, same channel numbers. All of them, we're still working on getting the metering to match. But that way, you're not having to remember which site is this. What site am I looking at? What's the command again for this one? And again, it's about shaving that time and making what you do more efficient. For example, with the, there are many, many different remote control systems that I could recommend. I happen to go with Burke. Their web interface, I can pull up on my cell phone. I can be on the side of the road. I can bring up the cell phone and make changes. I don't have to remember, what's what. Because, I don't have to have a little cheat sheet of, okay, what is the channel number to do this on this transmitter? Because they're all the same. I know that RF on is channel 1. So there's some important, there's some important reasons to do that and to think that through. I like to plan with these sorts of things. Redundancy, again, goes along with, if you have IP connectivity at your transmitter site, that's great. What happens if it doesn't work? Think that through. Now, there is calculus involved in that. I mean, there is at a site like my 105.1, which is a Madison rim shot, signal is so-so, ratings are so-so, billing is so-so, I'm not going to throw a lot of money at that. I'm not going to spend money for a redundant link to the transmitter site and all these different things. However, WOLX, which is our big station, I absolutely will. I've got, 2 or 3 transmitters available to it, 2 antennas. I've got different multiple feeds for internet, for audio, all kinds of things. I now have standardized on Nautel transmitters. All of those transmitters can play audio off of a stream. It's already built into a preset. They have the ability to connect to a Shoutcast server. So if my studio goes down, transmitter will fail over to a stream. All of my sites have doomsday boxes, just an old computer running some programming connected to a silent sensor. All of these things, simply because if I'm in Milwaukee and WOLX has a catastrophic failure, it's at least 90 minutes before I'm there. So how do you manage that? Well, again, you think about those situations and you put the things into place to make sure that those are covered. The doomsday box, where if the studio goes completely down, we lose an STL, we at least have something on the air from the transmitter site. We also have a little studio facility there at the transmitter site that has a generator. And that kind of goes with centralized control as well. If you have IP connectivity, you can bring all of these varied sites and all of these varied pieces of equipment together. Here's an example of centralized control. This is the screen that I actually have this on a screen in my office that I can refer to sitting at my desk. So if those few times that I'm actually sitting in the office, here we go, I can see what's going on without having to leave my desk. And if there's an alarm like these, which are actually just misconfigured, you can see right away that there's a problem. So here's an example of pulling together SNMP, pulling together all these different devices from different networks, bringing them all into one place. WMYX is in Milwaukee. You can see, HD power, analog power. Mix 105.1 is in Madison. Gives me forward and reflected power. WXSS is in Milwaukee, but it's not on site. That's a different transmitter site. Again, all the power levels, WLX in Madison, MMM in Madison, and then 105.7, which is a translator, which is down here, and an AM. I have building temperatures. Those are all SNMP. And then again, I've got the site cams. All of my sites have a camera pointed at the transmitter so that, heaven forbid, you get that 3 a.m. call and the transmitter's off, I don't have to drive the entire way going, did the tower fall on it? Is it on fire? You can see right away what's going on. And I can see this from my desk. This refreshes every couple of minutes. But using tools like SNMP, I can pull in all of these different things and put them together. Now, this screen obviously is autopilot, so you can put anything you want on it. I just chose these because, to me, this information was the most useful to me. But with SNMP, for example, I could add thermostats for my server rooms. An interesting thing with the remote control for this station here, for 105.1, that is completely controlled by SNMP. I don't know how many of you are familiar with SNMP, but it's basically a management protocol, simple network management protocol, and it allows you to control devices that can be controlled like that through a network. So I have no wiring for status, telemetry, anything like that with that transmitter. However, the backup transmitter there is an old Harris HT7. That transmitter, because it doesn't have SNMP, what do? Well, I bought an inexpensive Broadcast Tools web remote control that has the hard wiring for relays and closures, and that has SNMP. So I can actually tell the BERC to control and read the Harris analog transmitter through that hardwired remote control. So all that gets pulled together. That's the great thing about SNMP. If it talks, it doesn't care what that device is. But that's what I'm talking about that centralized control. Now imagine that if I had, and I did, back in the day, each one of those sites had their own different model remote control with their own different controls and setups and metering. Some of them didn't have the same metering as the others. Some of them told me different things. Some of them had different, you know, some transmitters had power trims, some didn't. You know, it just became very difficult to manage for one guy as we added more and more radio stations. So all of a sudden now, you know, I'm having to remember, okay, when the transmitter calls me, is this the one with the sign systems? Okay, so that one I have to dial 66 first before I can do, you know, at 3 a.m. when you're in a dead sleep, that is impossible. So now, you know, the transmitter calls at IDs, I can put in the same passcode. And with, by the way, with the BERC, what's kind of cool is I still maintain telephone control as well. Well, they can all network with each other, so I can dial one number and access any of the transmitter sites from that one number by entering in a code. Another example of control, this is the building layout in Milwaukee. I can control environmental things from a web page, from wherever I'm at. So if somebody says, oh, it's cold over here, or get a complaint from a salesperson, I can go in and make some adjustments. So, you know, kind of coming back around to all of that, you know, people like Axia, Wheatstone, Nautel, Harris, Gates Air, all have really kind of jumped on the bandwagon with this, with SNMP and control. The thing is I have found the first thing I thought of is, wow, this is great, and then immediately went into overload. What do I do with all of this information? And that's where, you know, again, going back a few slides where I was talking about centralization, customization, those sorts of things, that's when it becomes fun. All of a sudden, you realize that there is a lot that you can do with these different vendors, getting them to talk to each other. You know, I mentioned before, Nautel has the built-in ability to connect to a Shoutcast server. Well, guess what Axia software can do? It can take LiveWire inputs and stream it. So all of a sudden, I've got backup STLs just sitting there that I already had, and now I can just reconfigure them and repurpose them. You can take that a step forward with SNMP. Instead of having all of those streams available, I can send a trap from one of my transmitters if there's a loss of audio to say, hey, turn on this stream on Axia. I want to be able to pull that audio from there. It becomes almost to a point where you almost think too much, and you get into, I joke with Alex about this, where you start swatting flies with sledgehammers because you go, oh my God, I can do this and I can do that, and then you start going, okay, I got to step back. I can't do everything. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But it is very, once you get over the whole traditional way of thinking, all of a sudden, you look at it and go, six sites? This is cake. You know, there's really not much to this. And that's where the savings come in for, you know, the person paying the bills. Because now all of a sudden, what used to take, you know, four or five people just because of the way the old equipment used to work, now it's me and two part-time people. And by the way, wherever I'm at, somebody calls and says, oh, you know what? I need to bring this up on a console and I can't remember how to do it. Again, with networking, I can log in. I can log into Axia. I can say, okay, here you go. You're all set. But the way that all of those devices work together is really a selling point. And that's the job that we have to do when we talk to our managers and say, hey, I've got all of these different places that you want me to be, but none of these are the same. And none of these are talk to each other. And it becomes very inefficient. And that's when you start speaking their language. When you can talk about inefficiencies and put a dollar sign on that. What's my time worth? All right, there isn't 27 hours in a day. I can't even work 24 hours in a day. I need to take a break at some point. So, you know, if we can spend a little money up front to free me up a little bit, I can then go back to working on the things for the creative geniuses. If I'm always putting out fires, I'm not going to have time to put together something that the staff is going to want to do, some big, you know, next promotion kind of thing. Plus, once you have these tools available, you can start thinking of ways to proactively open up opportunities. So a great example of this is when I built the Radio Milwaukee facilities in downtown Milwaukee. Great project. I'll never get to do it again. Very rarely do you get somebody who says, how much money do you need and tell me what you want to do? And you go, oh my God, have I died? I mean, this is unbelievable. But I was able to look at that in that way with spending money wisely but smartly. So obviously they play a lot of local music. They have a lot of musicians come into town. So why not put a jack for Axia in a wall in the green room where these people kind of warm up and they practice a little bit and play? Why not be able to capture that? It's easy enough to do. So again, you go, well, with the stuff we have, sure, let's do that. Nautel transmitters, you know, another great example with the streaming. I had an issue with an STL. Talked to Jeff. He's like, what? Absolutely, you can pull up a stream on a transmitter. Why not? So I created a Shoutcast server, pulled up the stream on the transmitter. Sounded just fine. We had a backup STL. So, you know, those are things that with traditional equipment, you can't really do easily. And there's nothing wrong with that if you have the time. There's nothing wrong with that if you have two or three radio stations that you're taking care of. But let's be honest, who does that anymore? Good, bad, or otherwise, there isn't anybody. There are very few people coming in nowadays into this industry. So we have to do what we can to become more and more efficient. One of the great things I love, I'm doing the participating in the SBE mentorship program, is I'm able to work with some younger people coming in who can challenge me on that. Well, why do you do it that way? And you go, well, you know what? Never really thought of that. You're right. Why do we do it that way? And kind of forces you to think a little bit. So other network items of note that I've done that have made things easier for me for managing all of these sites, voice over IP phone system. I know some people roll their own. That's great. I don't have the time for that. There is now a kind of a new class around here, TDS does it, called Managed SIP, which is basically, it rides on their T1. They manage it. It comes out like a PRI. You get the same per call pricing as voice over IP. It's a little more expensive, but they manage it. So it's, you basically call the phone company when there's a problem. I've had it for a couple years now, and I love it. Rolling your own is great if you can do it, but there is some maintenance involved with that. Security systems, we use the same security systems at all of our sites. They're all tied together. I can use my key fob to get into all the sites. The security cameras can be accessed from all the sites. Doors can be controlled. I can unlock a door, you know, from my phone here in Milwaukee and open a door, the front door in Milwaukee. Audio over IP, as we migrate to, and we've standardized on Axia, that opens up a whole lot of doors in terms of what you can do with remote equipment. All of a sudden, instead of, you know, having to mess around with each radio station has their own Marty or Comrex or whatever, or even worse, you have one of each and a bunch of switchers to switch back feeds, and you know that quickly becomes a problem. Audio over IP does a great job of simplifying that. And then transmitters, network transmitters. My goodness, what would we do without those? I was talking to Jeff Walton last night, and I got a phone call from the transmitter site, from WOLX. And this was a couple days ago. I was telling him the story last night. And it reported back that the forward power was low. It was below the limit. But it was still on. So I was like, okay, that's a little weird. I'm not sure why that would be. That doesn't sound right. But I'm going to log into the interface and find out. So I hang up the phone, and as soon as I hang up the phone, I got an email from the transmitter saying that one of the phases went down. So the transmitter ran it at low power. But I didn't even have to do anything more after that. I went, got the email. Oh, okay. Call the power company, make sure everything's okay. Life went on. That would have been a lot of time out of my day had I not had that equipment, because I'd get the call, transmitter's running at low power. Well, had I tried to turn the Continental on, it wouldn't have come on at all. So now I'm going, okay, now I'm going to have to drive an hour and a half to the transmitter site, at night. And I would have had to go up there only to find out that there was a phase that was down, and then, I had to take those other steps. Well, I didn't have to leave my couch. I came in, okay. By the time I hung up the phone, I got the email, I knew exactly what was going on, I moved on. Couldn't do that a couple of years ago. Now again, multiply that by just the six that I'm directly responsible for. You can see why, I aged a lot quicker than than most people have my age. But again, it was, it's all of that thinking. It's me sitting down and saying, what are the pain points here? What are the struggles? How can we make this easier? And then taking that to management and saying, okay, here's what we can do to make this happen. Another thing we do is trouble tickets. I don't know how many people use those. One of the things I have to be very good at is managing problems as they come in. We have over 100 people between the two buildings. How do you keep all that straight? And it used to be, hey, I'll catch you in the hall, I'll send you an email. Well, if I'm dealing with something broken in the other studio and you catch me in the hall and you say something, guess what? 30 seconds later, it's gone. So I use a software called Spiceworks. It's absolutely free. It's a ticket system and it works fantastic. And I'm able to, again, they've got a mobile app. I can log in at any time, see what's open, see who's working on what, see what the status is. And even with my staff, I can hold them accountable and say, hey, you haven't been working on this. What's going on? So it's just one more way to kind of manage all of that. And then, the other kind of bigger picture in all of this is ask why not. When you look at how these things are set up, ask yourself, why couldn't we do it that way? So this is the thinking that I just alluded to. Think about everything you need to touch on a daily basis or in an emergency. Do you have a way to access it from somewhere else, from your computer or your smartphone? If not, can you do that? Before I got the Arc Plus system, I had Arc 16s. Well, they don't really have a web interface on them. However, they did have the Autopilot software that did a graphical interface for the Arc 16. So what did I do? I put that on a computer at the transmitter site, connected to the Arc 16, put in a VPN, and put VNC on that machine. So even before we had direct web access, I at least had access to be able to see the bigger picture of the Arc 16, and that was just more of a, hey, well, if I can see this computer from somewhere else, this is really handy. So we go back to how do you make that happen? How can I control the device or recover from a failure if I'm not there? The time to figure out what do I do is not when after you get the phone call. You want to know ahead of time. Remember I mentioned with the phase loss on the transmitter, you want to have as much information as you can get immediately. Because that is the difference between rolling back over at 3 a.m. and going back to sleep, or getting out of bed, driving 20 minutes to the transmitter site only to find out that it was something completely out of your control. So think about those things, and think about at all of these different remote sites, is there a piece of equipment that could that could be worth a remote reboot box? A great example of that is I have a Comrex Access that sometimes goes a little bit crazy if the power flickers. Well, you know, it used to be I'd drive out there, power cycle it, and it'd be fine. Well, put a remote box on there, and I can now just log in, click a button, and reboot it. And even that Comrex is kind of an interesting situation that I solved about satellite programming, where we had a station here in Madison that wanted to run some satellite programming. We couldn't put a dish there at the site, and this was 6-7 years ago. Plenty of real estate up in Milwaukee, so I put in the receiver in Milwaukee, and I streamed the audio and the closures down on a Comrex access over the public internet. We've been doing that for years. No one ever knew. So, but that was another example of, I could have just said, we can't do it. Sorry, no satellite. But I thought, there's got to be a way to do this and a way to make this all work, and we found it. So kind of in closing, you know, I can take some questions and maybe talk about if you guys have some things maybe that you've done that made your life easier. I'd love to hear them. But, you know, to kind of wrap up, managing sites even just managing one site can be difficult. Managing 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 can be exceptionally difficult, but it doesn't have to be. And, you know, unfortunately, we can't unilaterally make that decision. I'd love to go to everybody's site and go, yep, buy what you need. I can't do that. Obviously, I'm not the person who has the checkbook. So it's up to us to kind of do that research and make that case. And the best way to do that I've found, is to be able to document that in money and say, okay, if we don't replace these transmitters in Madison, we're going to have to hire somebody. And good luck. You know, there's nobody left unless you're willing to pay. Well, good, bad, or otherwise, that's the language that they speak a lot of times. And if you can do that, they go, oh, yeah, okay. And it's surprising how quickly, now, when I had the employee in Madison, you know, forget about buying a new transmitter. This year, I bought 3 without any questions asked. Same thing with the remote control system upgrade. I said, hey, this is going to allow me to, you know, handle, you know, transmitter calls and things wherever I'm at, over my phone with the remote interface. And I can get them to all talk to each other. And they all said, oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, let's do that. And then one final thing that I wanted to mention with all of this is just being careful about staying within the rules of the FCC as you go more and more unattended. One of the things I really am proud of and take a lot of pride in is that all of my facilities, you know, I've been through many of the alternate inspections. I stand by any of them. I would have an inspector show up tomorrow. I would not be at all afraid of what he'd find. And I, again, one of those situations where I use this technology to my advantage that way. How many people, and I want to ask for a raise of show of hands because I wouldn't expect most people to fess this up, but how many people actually take transmitter phase and antenna monitor readings at sunrise and sunset when you shift patterns? How many of you actually have somebody there writing down the readings or even have a remote control system that is set up to do that? It isn't just set up to run them every couple hours. Well, mine do. With the technology, I'm able to write scripts at pattern change that immediately log all the values and then call me if they're out of tolerance. So, you know, you can, again, another case for that. Now with this newer technology, you can do those sorts of things, whereas before there's the fudge factor, and we'll be okay. But now I can conclusively say, thanks again to auto-logging and all this other stuff, there's never a question if my tower lights are on or if my pattern's changed or if any of those stations are within their licensed parameters. I don't have to question that. I know. I mean, if they're not, I immediately know. And even better, if the devices taking those readings fail, I know right away. So I know that I need to be extra cautious of that. So just one more good case for that. So I listed on there, you know, Twitter, LinkedIn, that sort of thing. Any questions, any ideas, you know, we can talk about that now, but also later on, too, feel free. If there's any questions or anything you'd like to share, I see some hands up. Oh, no.
The mic's dead, I'm sure. One good point, too, to this is my history is disaster planning. You have to look for the worst-case scenario of everything to begin with. So where is it going to fail? A perfect example of that, though, is that the vendors are actually helping us, Nautel in particular. I get phone calls from the factory before the remote control calls me telling me I have a problem.
Right. And you make an excellent point about disaster planning. I didn't even talk about that, and it's not really kind of germane to this discussion.
But it is, because it goes hand in hand.
It is, because the time to have a disaster plan isn't after the disaster's happened. And just a kind of a funny little side story, a month or two ago, I had to send a program director, because that's part of the plan, had to send a program director out to a transitor site down here because the AC had failed. And it was getting really warm, and I needed somebody to open the door, and I was an hour and a half away. The program director complained to my general manager that I didn't have a plan. My general manager started laughing. He said, Chris Tarr has more plans than I can even, But you're absolutely right. Disaster planning for things that can possibly fail ahead of time. Know what's going to kill you. And my IT director asked me once, how do I know what to look for in terms of failures? I said, think about what keeps you up at night.
Okay, it's on. For those of us that have transmitters in the middle of nowhere, where they don't have the infrastructure for higher speed internet or anything like that, what type of speeds do you need for this to be an effective working system?
Not much. And in fact, in terms of being out in the middle of nowhere, even that is less and less of a problem now with wireless internet. In fact, I was just talking to Alex about some Ubiquiti stuff. There's a new, and I wish I could remember the name of it off the top of my head, there's a new cellular modem system out now that's fantastic. We're looking at putting those in as backups. But to answer your question, it's all low speed. I mean, you're just pulling every couple of seconds, pulling data. If you do a camera, that might be a little bit taxing, but I can tell you most of my sites here in Madison, two of the three are running on 1.5 meg down, 512 up DSL. So not much.
Okay.
Anyone? We have a few more minutes. Anybody have any other things that they've done in the past to kind of help out or make things easier? Over here.
And you've got two transmitters out there in the field that are operating on their 27th year,
right,
and they don't have backups and so forth and so on. What I have done is I have formed an alliance with the traffic lady, and she does the billing. And the day that we had the outage caused by the filament circuit getting ohmic in an HT5 FM, which put them down for 14 hours, I simply went into her office and said, Carla, could you tell me how much that outage cost the station? Thank you.
It's effective. It's effective. And that's it kind of goes back to having that conversation about, first of all, there was a time, one of the first places I worked, I said, we don't have a backup transmitter. And they always said, well, isn't that your job to make sure that it works? Those are the kinds of conversations where you have to, I call them the come to Jesus meeting, where I sit down with the general manager and go, listen, I can't spend your money for you. I'd love to. I can't tell you what you can and can't do, and I'm not going to complain. I am going to tell you, I'm going to be perfectly open with you. Here are your vulnerabilities, and that's a big one. So if you want to sit down and do the math, I can get you, a history report of power outages or whatever in your area, and you can make that determination, and I'll respect that. I mean, if you look at the math and go, yeah, it's not worth it to me to do that, I'm fine with that. But I want to make sure that you understand that. And that's, there was a general manager I was just doing some consulting work for who actually thanked me for that, because he said, I never really looked at it that way. I just had my contract engineer come in and tell me everything's fine. Nobody actually sat down and said, hey, based on what you have out here, here are your vulnerabilities, and here are some of the things, some bad things that could happen to you if you don't act. So as contract engineers especially, we kind of owe it to those people to lay that out and say, here's your worst case scenario. You, with that information, you decide what you want, how you want to handle that. Here's my recommendation, but it's not just me wanting to spend your money. I mean, that's entirely up to you how you want to handle that. And that's, I've found too that general managers have appreciated that approach because I, you know, as I tell them, either way is fine. I'm going to get paid either way. You know, if your transmitter goes off the air and you don't have a backup, I'm still going to get paid to come fix it, except you're going to be on my time. It's going to be when I have time to come out and do that. You know, so I just want you to know that it might be to your benefit to look into that, and I can help you find something that would work.
Just to add to what was talked about with the disaster recovery plans, in Minneapolis, they were putting in light rail in front of our building.
Oh, I heard about this.
6 years ago.
I know the story.
And a mile up the road, they hit a gas line, and they literally evacuated one, you know, huge city block for over 12 hours. And that was one of the things we had done plenty of disaster recovery and backups and things like that, but that was something that we really had not thought of. It's 3 FM stations, 2 TV stations, sales, everything that's in this building. We had not come up with anything that was, if you have to just literally pick up everything and walk away. And that's what all of these businesses had to do. So we sat down, we worked with TV, we worked with, you know, stuff around and came up with a way to deal with that. But that's something that caught us by surprise. You always think it's going to be a physical issue or something going on. But when you have to physically get out of the building and you can't say, no, I'm going to stay here, they won't allow that to happen. Right. That's something to
keep
in mind.
Well, you're familiar with the site with WOLX. We're putting something in the basement for that. And again, because at least from there we can do something. And since I have internet, all the other sites in Madison, I can operate and connect to all of those transmitters thanks to Nautel and their streaming with a couple of barracks appliances and a couple of computers. We're back on the air from that site. Now, I'm fortunately, having worked with Intercom for so many years, we dealt with Katrina at WWL, and we learned a lot of lessons about that. And, you know, resumption of operations is, or continuity in operations is very important to us. And so as a company, just for them, I go through twice a year, and we have a very comprehensive plan that is not only shared with the corporate people and put on file there, but it's also in case, let's say, I have to go to New Orleans because the engineer there is unavailable or something happened or we're on a rotation. I'll be able to walk in, grab that document, know all the codes to the transmitters, know the directions to get to every site, know the particulars of each network. And we do that for every site, and we publish those internally so that we have them. So, you know, some of these other stations that I've done some consulting for, I've sat down and I said, do you have a plan? Well, let's look at it. Let's figure it out. What happens if? And some people, they're small enough markets, so they go, we're just going to shut it down until it's fine. Well, that's at least it's a plan. May not be what I'd do, but it's a plan. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. By the way, on your reviews, you know, if you want to circle, you know, 1 through 5 or whatever, you can do it too. Just put, he tried at the last minute. Would be appreciated. Thank you.